Coming up, it's At the Closing Table, the podcast where Ariel and Ashley talk all things real estate, from local market trends to first-time buyer tips and the stories behind every sold sign. New episodes drop the first Saturday of every month. Catch them all on the Reggae Rocks app or at reggaerockstx.com under the podcast tab. Now, let's head to the closing table.
Hello, this is Ashley Pfeiffer
and Ariel Brooke Stevens,
and you're listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. Ariel, you want to tell them where they can find us?
Yes, we are obviously on Kendall County, Reggae, Kendall, what is it?
Yeah, Kendall County Reggae Rocks.
Reggae Rocks, Kendall County. Mm-hmm. We're going to get in trouble for messing that up.
Yep.
You can also find us on Facebook at the Closing Table. You can send us an email at closingtable@gmail.com or on Instagram at Closing Table. We're not hard to find. We've been around for a long time.
Yep. We're around Bernie all the time. So yes. If y'all have questions about the podcast or any previous ones, or you have ideas for new podcasts, please feel free to reach out. We would love to hear from you. And in the new year, our goal is going to really be to be better on our socials, because I don't think we have anything really going on over there. But
you know, not really. And we have no good excuse.
No.
Except
New Year's resolution.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
Number one.
Well, and today we've been talking about it a lot.
Threatening it.
Well, sort of. Again, we're not financial advisors. We're not attorneys. We're not lenders. We're just trying to provide good information. But today we're excited that we have our first guest who is a lender and is going to walk us through the process. Donna Terrell is with Legacy Mutual Mortgage. And we like her a lot.
We like her a lot, yeah. She's been doing this. In fact, we were practicing, and so I asked how long you've been doing this, and you said
30 plus years.
Yes. A long time.
She knows her stuff. So, Donna, tell me, how did you get into the mortgage lending business?
Oh, wow. First, can I say that I'm honored to be your first guest?
Yes, you can.
We're super happy to have you.
She says she's honored, but maybe she's terrified.
Yeah, I think my legs may be shaking over here, but that's all right. I'm super honored that you trusted me and be your first guest. Like, that's super fun. How I got in the mortgage business, I moved from Austin to San Antonio, and my sister-in-law at the time owned a mortgage brokerage business, and I thought I was going to go back to school and become an architect. And she goes, what is it you like? I said, I just like playing with numbers. And she goes, why don't you try being a loan officer, see if you like it. And 30 plus years later,
here
I am.
Tell them what your degree is, because I find this very interesting.
Mechanical engineering.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. From A&M, right?
No, ma'am.
Oh, sorry.
The University of Texas.
Oh, you did it! I blocked that.
Shoot.
I thought we were friends.
You jacked that up.
Yeah, because I always say it's from A&M.
You teed that up like I just hit that.
You sure did.
Oh, that's good times right there, because I always tell people you have a mechanical engineering degree from A&M.
Oh,
legit.
My gosh.
I do. My bad. I'm probably going to stick with that story, just FYI.
Her next New Year's resolution is to correct how she introduces Donna to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I think a lot of people, people don't buy and sell homes all the time, and some people don't need lenders and even know how to start the process. Obviously, the market's been a little slow lately. We've been talking about that quite a bit. But I know from what I'm seeing, people are at least talking about getting loans. They're talking about getting back in the market. Interest rates, short-term interest rates went down. Did the mortgage rates go down?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
One of the things that Ariel and I talked about was I had seen you, and you had made comment about the fact that when there is an interest rate reduction on the horizon, that mortgage rates tend to even themselves out or do whatever they're going to do a little bit prior to what them actually announcing it, right? So
yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that confused me.
So, I mean, it's always the temperature of the market, right?
Right.
So leading up, there's, you know, hey, an expectation of the Fed's going to do this, the Fed's going to do this, the Fed's going to do this. And so investors hop into the mortgage, they're buying mortgage-backed securities, right? And then, so that means that the market's really good and strong, and that were already seeing a reduction or an increase before the meeting.
Gotcha.
Then once the chairman talks, usually there's a lot of fear put back in the market. So.
Okay, well, that's something for our buyers to know that, okay, you've got a window, and it's generally before they actually have the meeting, before it all happens,
this
where you might
sure.
see, where you might see a little bit of a drop.
Well, and I find so often when rates go down, the short-term interest rates, people are like, oh, the rates went down. But it's sometimes very hard to explain that that doesn't always affect the mortgage rates. And then people, I think people have just been overall discouraged and fearful, whether it was necessary or perceived. I think that we're stabilizing. You know, I know most people say we look a lot like 2019.
Yeah, I would say that in, like, I tell my clients all the time, stay in the big picture. Like, in the big picture, rates have come down quite a bit.
A lot.
You know, in the past 3 years, I have some clients that are at 8% is what we've closed on.
Wow.
And now we're in the lower sixes. So they've come down,
mm-hmm.
right?
Significantly.
Yes.
Yes. But it's just so hard because generationally, what we are seeing is the younger crowd has never seen anything like 6 and 7,
right?
So those of us that have been around for a long time, like when I started, 6 was a great rate.
Oh, I was ecstatic at 6.5 when we bought our house.
But that has not been what all these new young buyers are used to. And so they are thinking, I'm going to hold out and get a 2. Okay, yeah, that's not realistic. And we need to make sure that they understand that that's not where we're going, at least not right now.
100%. I 100% agree with that. That's part of what we have to re-educate in the market is that those were once in a lifetime events,
mm-hmm.
those really low rates. And we're digging ourselves out of that.
That's what I always say.
Yes.
They should have never been that low for that long. That's why we're in this mess that we're in.
It was artificial.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The government artificially
it was forced.
Forced those rates down, then artificially forced those rates back up to fight inflation.
Right.
So now that the government has slowed their roll, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I don't want another pandemic to throw rates where they were.
No.
And I always thought that they maybe didn't even need to go as low as they did to get people off and running to buy. I mean, I'd have been ecstatic at 4.
Right.
You'd still have had all those people refinancing and getting in the market at 4.
Right.
Right.
And then for a while, we had an inventory problem. But nationally, that inventory problem, like, we have a lot of inventory.
Yeah, even here in Burney. I mean, this is a huge amount compared to what we've had in years past.
Correct.
Even before the craziness of COVID,
yes.
I feel like we've got more on the market than what we used to have, like in the old days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in our market, it's hard. This is a hard thing, but I think if people really, like, reached out and let a lender crunch their numbers.
Yes.
You know, there's so many people have so much equity,
mm-hmm.
right? And you can do a lot with that equity. So maybe you're not purchasing a move up, but you may be selling, purchasing a lateral house,
mm-hmm.
and then paying off a bunch of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And in this economy, the mindset of that is so freeing.
Right.
Yes.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
We always are talking about, you know, how statistically it was every 7 years, you know, you're bumping up. And now, you know, we're not seeing that because they can't afford it. Interest
rate
wise, I mean, nobody's going to leave a 2 or 3% interest rate to bump up to another house. Not to mention that they've all gotten so, we've got multiple issues going on. And so we talk about, you know, how what I'm seeing is people doing like second lien home equities so that they can build a third bedroom or build a pool or whatever, because they can't afford to leave the interest rate that they're in and go buy a house that has, you know, a bigger house or a pool or whatever. But we really haven't talked about that mindset, about, you know, making a lateral move and using some of that equity to pay off your debts and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that's why we brought a guest.
I know. See, we never would have thought to talk about that.
There's no telling what kind of knowledge she's got over here. Okay.
Well, because we have, I was shocked to learn that on average, that the national age for first-time home buyers is in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Shocked me. Forever in a day, it was your early 20s or at the worst 30s.
Right.
I was old when I bought my first house compared to my peers. But so because we have so many people who have never entered the process, who are frankly terrified. They're looking at having to borrow money from mom and dad for down payments and whatnot. If someone were coming to you and saying, okay, I've got no idea what I'm doing, what would say, what is the first step to all of this? What a lot of people are going to know, what do I need to be paying attention to? I mean, we always joke about the people who like buy a car right before closing. It's our favorite. It's our favorite.
The worst.
But then the flip side to that is that you've got a lot of people who are having to make a lot of big life decisions. Like, if someone comes to you and they have no idea how all of this works, where would you tell them to start?
So, I think part of the reason people are older and just getting to jump into the home market is, one, the threshold right now, the level of entry price-wise mm-hmm. is really high, mm-hmm. right? And so that has kept people renting longer probably than they even wanted to. But this is what I tell all my clients. My job is literally to put everything in a dollar. You know what I mean? Let me put everything in a dollar. Your payment, your cash out of pocket, mm-hmm. all of those things. And then you can make a financial decision, mm-hmm. right? So I just met with some client, first time home buyers yesterday, and super organized. And that's one thing. A lot of times what they qualify for and what they want to spend,
yes.
there's a big wide gap, right? So yes. these clients, you know, just rough numbers, I calculated, and I was like, okay, well, so you qualify for a payment of $4,600. And they're like, what? And they're like, we're paying rent at $2,000. Maybe we want to go to $2,500.
Right.
And so that's the, but without somebody helping you crunch numbers, like, you really don't know. Don't stay mired in indecision,
mm-hmm.
because it costs nothing to come let me calculate numbers for you.
That's
a
good point.
It's a free process.
Yeah. Credit score. I know that has kept a lot of people on the sidelines. People are terrified that they've made a bad decision or they can't climb their way out of some of the college debt and some of the other stuff. So what advice are you giving folks with regards to credit score, or what is a minimum credit score to qualify for certain loans?
Okay. So entry level is about a 600.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's way lower than I would have thought.
Right.
Yeah. I think, I mean, really and truly, if we're yeah. not educated and we do this all day, the general population, we say this every single podcast about you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
You don't know what questions to ask if you don't know. That blows my mind, because I thought you had to be like in the 700s for
no,
sure.
No. 600 that is FHA, crazy. That's 3.5% down, right? And you can get gift for that down payment from a family member or an employer. You can negotiate through the contract for the seller to help you pay your closing costs.
Right.
Like, it's, I say this all the time, real estate is the gateway to building wealth.
One.
And generational wealth. We talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and rent is 100% interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100% interest. You're not getting any return on that.
Right.
At all.
Right.
So have an asset that's going to grow in value. That's another thing that's going to be hard. So all of the young people that purchased in those pandemic times, mm-hmm. where the values increased so fast, mm-hmm. you know, like, they built 100 to 200,000 in equity in a very short time period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're going to want to replicate that.
Of course.
And the reality is, it takes a little, it does build equity, but it stair steps a little bit slower than what they saw.
Yeah.
In the short time.
Yeah.
Since the pandemic.
I'm finding that a lot of people who purchased in, say, mid 2023, they bought at the height, and there were still, you know, multiple offer situations, mm-hmm. and now life has changed. Either now they're married, or there's a baby coming, or a job change. I've got to move because I can't work from home anymore. And they're staring down a loss on the sale of their house, because we're just in a completely different market now. That is a very, very tough pill.
That's a reality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right now. It really is a reality. So I kind of, in my opinion, I tell people, look, you don't buy real estate on a short term
mm-hmm.
time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You need to be there. They need to be there at least 3 years.
Right.
Especially on a small down payment.
Right.
Program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
because there's, you have to have enough time for appreciation to recover,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All of the stuff. So, especially going into production home developments, like those are hard if you're trying to leave in a year or two.
Yes.
Because they're putting brand new houses on the ground that are competing with your house.
Yeah. Yes, and now it's a lower price.
Right.
It's really, I mean, I know that the Converse area and some of those areas that are serving the military, especially those military personnel who are purchasing first-time homes, I don't know how they're doing it,
yeah.
really, because you know you're only there for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
You have to, they have to literally put those probably into a rental for a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So with regards to, you know, we're not in 2008, 2007 where anybody could walk in and get a, what do they call them? No doc loans.
Yeah, no doc loan.
Oh, it hurts me to say that word. So what do people need to have, what do they have to have in order to come and get some solid information from
you? Okay. So one, don't fight the paperwork. Like you, it's a reality.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the more you fight it, the more frustrated you get, but it's not, we're not moving forward without it, right?
Right,
so
right. Except the inevitable.
Yeah. Don't fight the paperwork. And my clients that are like Johnny on the spot with the paperwork,
yeah.
they have the best process. You know what I mean? Like, yes. they love the whole process because they're not fighting every little, well, why do you need that? Well, I've never had to supply that before.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But basically, I mean, the easy stuff is pay stubs, W-2s, or tax returns. And bank statements.
Okay.
And a driver's license.
For self-employed, is it still 2 years?
It's it depends. It's two okay. years if it's going to be an FHA or VA loan.
Yeah.
On conventional, they'll allow 1 year tax return average if they've been in business for 5 years.
Oh.
And if they've been in business less than 5 years, then it is 2 years.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so let's say that our last time that we met, we talked about title commitments. And I mm-hmm. think the time before that, we talked about the whole process, right?
Yeah.
So we talked about, okay, is we the title company are doing this? This is what the agent's doing. And this is kind of what the lender is doing, right? And so we didn't make up your part, but we probably didn't have it quite as accurate as you will have it. So
it wasn't buttoned up.
Yeah, I mean, we were like, this is what I think the lender's doing.
We're not a lender.
We just kept saying, we're not a lender.
But this is what we think they're doing.
Yes.
Okay, so talk to us about, I am a first-time home buyer, or maybe I'm not. Maybe this is my third or fourth house. And I come to you, and I'm like, okay, I want to buy a house. You do my numbers, right? And you're like, okay, Ashley, you can afford a $120,000 house, or, you know, what you tell me, whatever. Okay. At that point, is that where you give out like the pre-qualification letters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And tell me how sometimes I get a pre-qualification letter with the contract and then these people don't really qualify. So how does that really happen? Or does it happen in your world? It's only if I've got Shady McShaderson as the lender that does that kind of thing.
So, yeah. So every lender's not this created equally.
And we yes. know that.
Correct.
Yes. We know that.
All right. So if you are calling like a call center, and I don't want to, like a big box bank.
Okay. That's what we call them too. Perfect.
Yep.
Then the person that's on the other side, you're really just getting a red light, green light. Like they pull credit score fits. They are looking at all the information they've been told.
Like okay.
what my income is, mm-hmm. all of that.
But maybe not all the debts?
They have the debts because they pull credit.
Or they're
credit.
Just taking what
oh,
that
okay.
person is saying
right.
versus verifying.
Okay.
Versus verifying. So you get a red light, green light. Hey, this looks great. Go buy a house.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it too. Like I'll have a client that calls and says, well, you know, 2 months ago, Chase said I was qualified for $325,000. I'm like, okay, well, I can tell you today, based on what I'm seeing, you qualify for
$120,000.
You know, and they get
yeah.
really angry.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't help the big box. It's a call center, and it's usually not somebody that has experience
right.
with calculations and, you know, looking at all the details it takes to have yeah. an accurate
I think one of the things that we do say regularly is that it is so important to use a local person that you can walk into their office, mm-hmm. because crap hits the fan all the time throughout a real estate transaction.
Yeah.
And Ashley uses the analogy of a duck. Those of us working behind the scenes, it looks so smooth on the surface, but we are paddling like crazy to make sure that everything gets done correctly and that we're all working in the best interest of our people. And a big part of that is being able to have face-to-face time with your lender, or a lender that is responsive, that will pick up the phone when an agent calls or the title company calls. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think that's been a disservice with the big box lenders, because so many times I've had clients not make it to the closing table because magically they just couldn't get their questions answered, or they had to talk to five people before their questions got answered.
Or they just quit answering the phone. I mean, they 100%. Quit returning. We go literally into a black hole when something happens that they can't resolve easily, and they won't speak to anybody. They won't return calls, no return emails. Yeah. And we're 2, 3, 5 days past our closing date. Nobody has heard a word. And that does nothing but create stress for every single person right. involved in that transaction. And so that's why always we say, Cole, go down the street, go talk to Donna, because you can walk in to her office and say, hey, what's going on? And she's not going to leave you in the black hole, the right. pit of doom and despair.
Well, and the one right. thing that I think mm-hmm. is also super important is when someone doesn't qualify, tell them early.
Yes.
Do not waste their time. Do not get their hopes up. Let them, and then let them know what they need to do to get in the position to purchase a home, because no one does anybody any service by just stringing them along.
Right. Deliver bad news fast.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Okay, let me ask you this. Back in the old days, like Mortgage Meltdown days, there were places and people that could help. Like, let's say you've got a buyer and they've got a 580 credit score, right? Are there still places that can help them?
Yeah, there's still those companies, but also through the credit company we use Exactus.
Oh, okay.
They have a simulation. You know what I mean? If you're below 550, then you need to go to a company, a credit repair company.
Okay.
But 550 and 580, mm-hmm. it doesn't take usually that much to get you to a 600, 620.
Oh.
And we can simulate that. And then I email them, hey, do this, this, and this. Has a time frame on it. And then once they've done it, we rescore them. And
see, I mean, I think this is fabulous for first-time homebuyers.
Well, and really I was going to ask you, too, because I think a lot of people in the first-time home buying space, I know a lot of my millennial clients have said they're so adverse to debt that they got themselves in trouble because they didn't even have a credit card.
Yeah.
They were almost like virtually not on the radar at
right.
all.
Right.
And so in that respect, what do you advise people to do to build credit versus repair it?
Okay. So this is one of the easy fixes. So a lot of times if I see a 580, maybe they only have it's not that they have bad credit. They haven't built
correct
a credit
yeah.
history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times it's because maybe they only have a car loan.
Gotcha.
So we go open a secured credit card mm-hmm. with a $300. So secured means you're using your own money,
mm-hmm.
giving it to the bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they set up a revolving card on that, charge, tank of gas, pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually 60 days, we get a boost in the score.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's fabulous knowledge right there that since we're not lenders, we didn't have. So that's exciting. All right.
I know. That's good to know, because I think a lot of people, I mean, as smart as it is not to get yourself in debt, you also have to know how to use it.
Right. It's a double-edged sword.
Credit scores aren't going away.
No.
And those scoring models, that's what they're doing. So revolving is 35% of the score. And that's what that model's written about, is how they're managing that debt, right? So mm-hmm. if you have a managing means if you have a $10,000 limit and you're keeping that balance at $9,900, $9,800, that is not managing. And so you're going to get adverse scoring for that.
Right.
But if you have a $10,000 limit and you're keeping your balance at $2,000 month in, month out,
mm-hmm.
and you're paying it down and then you might go a little bit, that's managing your debt.
Okay. I think we've talked about this I'm going to go off topic for just a second because we have college age kids, right? And so this is one of the things that I have been concerned with is, you know, making sure that the boys have, you know, established credit and all of that so that should they ever actually graduate from college and get a real job, that they could, you know, buy a home or, you know, that kind of thing. And so one of the things that we did was we went down to Jefferson Bank and let them apply for a loan for their trucks, right? And so mm-hmm. and you know, making sure that they report it and all of that kind of stuff. And that has worked great.
Yeah.
And then I also put them on one of our credit cards. Each of them was on one
authorized user.
Yes, yeah. When they turned 18. So it gave them basically my credit score, I guess. I don't really know how all that worked, but you know, by the time we got ready to go do the thing at Jefferson Bank, my oldest had a 780 credit score. Yeah. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. That's fabulous. So there are tips and tricks, yeah. But I mean, I don't know all of them. That's just somebody else told me that.
Well, I often think too, but because we're in the industry, we think that kind of stuff is top of mind because one day we want them to move out and buy a house. And so how can parents help their kids do that?
You know, yeah. We talk about, you know, our kids moving back to Bernie and that, oh gosh, how will they ever afford, you know, to live here and all of that. So I don't know, just trying to think ahead, right?
Okay, so you've got somebody in your office, and they've qualified, they're ready to go, we're ready to look. I know as an agent, I do not show people homes who are not pre-qualified, because you do that in the beginning of your career, and then you find out you've been showing them houses they cannot afford, because they thought they could. So once we get somebody under contract, what does it look like from your end after that?
Okay, so once we receive the executed contract, we have 3 business days to mm-hmm. send the loan disclosures to the borrower, which is all the terms, you know what I mean, how the contract is, who's paying what, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
The borrower can lock at that point or they can keep floating, but we send that paperwork. Because then we're going to move that loan into processing.
Gotcha.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so that's when inspections are done. Mm-hmm. Once y'all say good, green light on inspections, we order the appraisal. The appraisal is the longest timeline.
Mm-hmm. Is it still pretty long?
Well, it's faster right now because nobody's busy.
Right.
But yeah, it's about 5 days right now.
Oh, wow. That's pretty quick.
Okay.
And then we order title. You know what I mean? We tell the client, hey, you got to shop your insurance.
Yeah.
Make sure you're shopping your insurance. Most of the time for us, they've given us their paperwork. So all we need are maybe updated pay stubs and bank mm-hmm. statements. Mm-hmm. Then when processing gets it, they submit to underwriting. The underwriter is who re-reviews all the paperwork and they approve the loan.
Okay. And this is where the conditions come, right? So, uh-huh. Right at this first round of review.
Underwriting conditions, yeah.
Okay. And this is where they say, like, give us a 2 or 3 examples of underwriting conditions.
You had these deposits. Where did this money come from? Track the money.
Okay.
Is a lot of times. Sometimes it's silly stuff. Can they explain this previous address?
I love those.
It's the wizard behind the curtain, honestly. Yeah. Like, you can blame so much on the underwriters because we all know we can't do anything about it.
Or we may have qualified them paying off some debt, so they need to get these payoffs to us.
Yes.
Got it.
So those conditions should not be anything that's surprising, right? Because we've already done a thorough review of the supporting paperwork that they've supplied.
A lot of times conditions are surprises to the agents because people don't want to tell their agents everything, which is fair. Yeah. You don't have to.
Yeah, you only get part of the story.
Except those conditions can sometimes delay closing. If you're working on something and you need a little bit of extra time, but you don't really want to tell your agent why, which again is why it's important to have a really good contact with the lender because she's not going to divulge anything that is confidential. But at least she can say they're buttoning up some conditions. Right. And then
or
you
I can
know.
Say, don't panic.
Right. Please don't panic.
The reality of this, you know, I may need a couple more days to close.
Right.
Once they get it to me.
Right.
But we're all good. I mean, some things that can cause a delay is when they're self-employed and we need transcripts from IRS.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. You know, worst. Like when we had the furlough a few months.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was a delay in that. But
yeah. I didn't have anybody to do that, but did you see most sellers on the other side being understanding?
Well, what we finally did is just clients can get them themselves, like by an email or call in or something.
Mm-hmm.
And those systems were working, so it just wasn't the human side.
Uh-huh.
Of where how we order third party.
The human side of the IRS yeah. doesn't work at all any day ever. Awesome.
Okay, so I've got a question.
Okay.
So several times throughout my years doing this, I have been in the closing room and have gotten a phone call, hey, stop the closing, XYZ has happened, right? One time the gentleman came in to close at 8:30 and at 7:30 he had quit his job, so the lender called to do the verification of employment, right, and he had quit. I had one where everybody signed everything and we sent off for funding and the lender called and was like, look, they just went to Ashley Furniture and bought $126,000 worth of furniture, so they no longer qualify. So these type of things that happen, I know good and well that you tell your borrowers, here is a list of things that you should not do.
We send it to them, do's and don'ts.
Oh, so what is the malfunction here? Okay, so give us some of the do's and don'ts.
Do not open up any debt.
Yes.
No credit cards, no cars.
No cars.
No furniture loans.
No fridges. Do not buy a fridge.
Yeah.
No, like, do not open up any debt. So sometimes they get so scared, they're like, hey, I want to charge on an existing account. Can I do that? I said, yes. You don't quit living. It's just nothing new. Don't quit your job.
Oh, God bless it. Yes, that just was horrible.
So the verification of employment is something that I have heard almost 9 times out of 10 that people were completely surprised that it actually happened. And I said, well, I'm
day of.
Certain yeah. you were told at some point in the process it was going to happen. But day of
verbal. And all it is does so-and-so still work there?
So how do you handle that for self-employed people?
Self-employed's different.
Okay.
So what they do on them is they do third party, like on the internet. Is their place of business still
gotcha
operating?
Gotcha.
And then yeah. and a lot of times we'll get a CPA letter.
Yeah.
Saying I've been doing their, you know, mm-hmm. returns for this many years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So don'ts. We're not opening any new credit. What else is on our don't list?
Don't open. Yeah. Don't buy anything
uh-huh.
with new credit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make a large deposit. Like, all money has to be tracked
except
for your regular pay, right? Okay. Let's see.
I did have that, just on a side note. And it was a man. And he deposited $8,000 because he sold his hunting blind. And then he had no paperwork. No, I mean, it was a big thing. It's
hard to track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It stopped our closing for like 2 days over, and he was just beside himself.
Yeah, Do not deposit cash.
Yeah, he's like, it was my money. I'm like, sir, I don't know.
Yeah, the who, what, when, where, how.
Keep your job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Keep your job.
Keep your job. A hard one is, especially Texas, we're a community state property, right? Mm. So people that are going through a divorce will always say, well, and I'll say, hey, I'm waiting for your signed decree, and then we can close. Well, why was my wife able to buy a house? How'd she do it? And I said, probably because somebody did it for her. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Did somebody pay cash? Did a parent buy the house in their name?
Yeah.
But she didn't just buy a house.
Yeah. Or if she did, then when she gets ready to refinance or sell, guess what? You're going to be a part of that.
Right.
And I just don't think, I think sometimes people are not given all the information. And it's very, very concerning. But I see it quite often where people are closing in other parts, either locally other parts mm-hmm. or, you know, other parts of the state. And they are purchasing without understanding what ramifications they are going to encounter when that other party gets ready to sell or yes. to refinance or whatever. Because one of the things that we as the title company are looking for is, what was the date of your divorce? Yeah. And if that date is after after your purchase, then that spouse has interest, because in the state of Texas, we are a community state.
Right.
What's yours is mine, and what's mine is yours, and that's the way it rolls.
Right. So we did a whole podcast on divorce.
I had one where his attorney was literally telling him, you're divorced.
Yeah.
And there was no final decree. Like, to the, I think I probably even called you and said, what is that? Are they divorced?
No.
And so I called the county. I was like, has the judge signed? No. Okay, well then why is...
But yeah. That's the other part. A lot of divorce attorneys will tell folks, it's written in your divorce decree that somebody, so-and-so can go buy the property. It doesn't actually matter, because until you're legally divorced, yes, you can go buy property.
This client was selling. So mad at me, and I was like...
So don't kill the messenger.
Here is one thing that we have talked about previously, is that there are different types of attorneys.
Yes.
And a family law attorney is not a real estate attorney. And mm-hmm. I think
that's the problem.
Yes. And it happens so often, mm-hmm. you know, that these guys that are preparing these divorce decrees, when they prepare it, they will talk about the property. They'll say, you know, 103 North Saunders. Okay, we as a title company and a real estate attorney would know that you cannot divest anyone of interest using a 911 address. It has to be illegal. So if they don't put the legal address in that divorce decree, then we can't take that from the district clerk's office, record it in the official records, and divest people of interest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and let me tell you, that causes lots of problems, because they're like, there it is in black and white. Okay, no, I need your lot and block, or I need, you know, exhibit A attached to this, you know, showing me the meets and bounds of this property, because a 911 can change tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we have lots of issues with that.
So here's something that's interesting, because people a lot of times don't want to talk about. But if you owe the IRS money, mm-hmm. as long as there's not a lien or a judgment and you're on a payment plan, we can use that payment plan and just put it in your debts and we're good. But we have to have at least a 90-day pay history.
Mm. Okay, this is another thing that I didn't know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So most of the time... Well, of course, on the seller side is where I see it, not so much on the buying side, because if on the buying side, I'm not going to see that, right? Because they don't own the property, it's not attached and all of that kind of thing, so it's a little bit different. But I have had refinances, you know, where they're refinancing to pay off those debts. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize that you can treat it just like a car loan or, you know, just any other type of debt. You just put it in the debts column and move on.
Yeah, 90-day pay history, and then we just put it in the debts.
Okay, so things like abstracts of judgments and stuff like that, if you see that against borrowers who are trying to borrow, you know, to buy a house, is that not something that you would require them to pay off prior to? Or would that also be the same type thing?
So I've got to tell you, like, I don't know that I've ever had that come up on a buyer.
Okay.
So I don't have any direct knowledge of that. How would that come up for a buyer?
Well, I would have thought maybe you would see it on a credit report, right? You wouldn't see...
We see a lot of stuff on child support on the
buyer
side.
Oh, but you would for sure see that.
Yeah, so on child support, so the attorney general, if it's back child support, mm-hmm. a lot of times it'll show up as a collection. Mm-hmm. And we cannot close with an attorney general outstanding collection. That has mm-hmm. to be cleared in full. Now, if the attorney general is in just recurring debt, right, on the credit report, like this mm-hmm. is what they owe every month,
right.
That is fine. That debt just goes in the debt-to-income ratio. But an outstanding
I've had the outstanding for child support.
Really?
It's not fun.
I've had it, of course, on the seller's side, you know, throughout the years many times, but never on the buying side. Mm-hmm. So same thing with the child support. If it's a recurring debt and they've been paying it for over 90 days, it's fine. But if there's a collection that they have not addressed, or what if it's being garnished from their wages, that would be the same thing. It would be a recurring debt.
So if it's being garnished as back pay, because mm-hmm. that collection is always about back pay when they've gone to court.
Right.
Because they haven't paid. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
So that's always about back pay. But so garnished is, usually all child support is going through, right?
The payroll.
Your problem is when you have people that change jobs a lot.
Yeah.
then you have all these misses, mm-hmm. and that's where some of that back child support, if you okay. know, if the spouse goes to court with them immediately.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I cannot close with an outstanding attorney general collection.
Huh. Okay.
And that's not a quick fix.
No,
it's not.
That is not a quick fix. I mean, that's going to take probably, because you got to go back to court.
Months. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's usually a deal killer.
You know, it's funny because I see this on a day-to-day basis, but I see it on the seller side. It's interesting to hear about it on the buyer side. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a whole different animal on yeah. the buyer side than it is yeah. on the sellers. You know, the sellers were like, look, if you want us to insure this, you got to pay this off, figure it out. And there's proceeds
to do it.
When right. you're on the buyer side, that's
a little harder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm glad to hear that there is a workaround. I mean, the workaround is, okay, you go back to court, you figure it out. Okay, now here's what you're going to pay every month, and you just include that in their debts ratio. And then, but again, I know it's not a quick process.
It is not.
And, you know, if you're trying to buy a house and you've got that, mm-hmm. I can see how that would be daunting.
Yeah.
But it is not something that is not insurmountable. You know,
right.
it is not insurmountable. So,
and I think and with that proper prior planning and talking to somebody, first thing straight away, talking to somebody about, I want to buy a house. What do I need to get going? What do I need to do to get going? I think you're right. That's where people, it's like the boogeyman. Like they mm-hmm. don't ask the question. So they just keep thinking it's not possible. It's not possible. When really it might be totally possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say just always be honest and forthright.
Yes.
With your loan officer, because
it's like, tell your doctor the truth, you know?
Right.
It's the surprise is what causes a delay. Like if we hit, as long as we know all the variables,
yeah.
we can figure out the equation, right?
That's a good way to put it.
But if you're plugging in these variables along the way, then we're scrambling for solutions.
Right.
Yeah. We talk about that, mm-hmm. about, you know, just give us the truth and then let us figure out
yeah.
the easiest and simplest way to get to the finish line. I mean, because we're all fighting for the same thing.
Yes.
You know, to get closed.
We're all committed to the
yeah.
closing.
We don't pay. Yeah. We don't get paid until it closes.
Yeah.
So it's always in our best interest to be of the best service to our clients.
Correct.
But I feel like the whole boogeyman out there is, you know, well, if I don't tell them, maybe they won't know. And, you know, if I don't say that I'm
yes.
still married and, you know, I mean, how often that happens in transactions all the time.
Yes. So right now, mortgage fraud is on the biggest ever.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it, because we're being contacted by fraudulent people all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how they're catching people? Through AI.
Really?
I knew there was going to be something good from that technology.
No kidding.
I know.
AI. So people that are saying they're moving into houses as their primary
uh-huh.
to get the better rate and the
mm-hmm.
lower down payment.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then never put the utilities in their name.
Oh.
Oh.
That seems like an easy one to do. Oh, it's like an easy thing to catch.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Huh.
Interesting.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. We've got SME qualified. We're moving down the road. We've got
okay.
inspections done. Everything's ready to go. Appraisals. I would say a lot of times people, even if they're told, they're surprised that they have to pay for the appraisal, partly because at some point you feel like you're just bleeding money to buy a house and you're just ready to get
yeah.
in. What are you seeing with appraisals these days?
On collection of money, or what do you mean?
Not so much collection of money, but so much the value of home.
Yeah,
like,
are they making appraisal pretty good?
For purchase prices, or are you seeing it get a little hairy?
You know, every time this question comes up, my answer at the time is, I haven't had any low appraisals. Then I go back to my desk. Jeez. So during the summer, I had one or two low appraisals, but not insurmountable. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Like they worked
yeah.
out. At my office, one of the LOs had a bigger, almost like a $200,000. Sweet.
Oh, yikes.
And they ended up working that one out too. So, I mean, it's like anything else. Like,
yes.
If everybody stays calm,
mm-hmm.
usually we can find a solution.
Right.
Right.
100%. Mm-hmm. Great communication trumps most problems.
Yeah.
Are you seeing because I had a transaction. It was a very high dollar property. Uh-huh. Ours required a second opinion, independent second opinion of the appraisal. The neighbors actually required a second appraisal, which I don't know any buyer that would
Both of those things can happen.
Are you seeing them happen in specifically in certain price points or
kind of across the board? A lot of times in the jumbo.
Yes.
Lending world, that's a requirement.
And jumbo, just for our people listening, a jumbo loan starts at what price point?
So they're going up, but mm-hmm. this year it was above 806,500.
Okay.
Oh.
Is that crazy? So 30 years ago when I started as a loan officer, the maximum conforming loan amount was $144,000.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Don't tell us. That is aging you. Do not say that, Donna.
Oh my goodness.
Holy smokes. And now we're at 804.
806. And this year it's even going up higher. I haven't plugged it in yet.
Well, and if you look at the market, a lot of people will tell you it is really hard to find a house below 800.
I mean, that's just crazy.
Especially for certain types of homes and the growing families and certain neighborhoods, mm-hmm. they don't exist. And even what would be considered a first-time home buyer neighborhood, you don't find a house below 400.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. Okay, so I know we're running out of time, but we've gotten through the appraisal. That's fine. That's ready to go. Usually, as a realtor...
Can we talk about lender required repairs on the appraisal?
Yes, we can.
Oh, sure.
Please do.
This is a good one.
Yeah. So, lender required repairs is anything that the appraiser puts on... He's going to do that a report subject to, and he has a list of repairs, right? And those then become lender required. They have to be completed mm-hmm. before we can close. So what our appraisers are looking for are anything hazardous, right? Broken glass, rotted wood, anything that's going to be a detriment, right?
Yes.
To the people buying or to the house,
mm-hmm.
the stability of the house. So we have to get... the agent has mm-hmm. to make sure those all get fixed, and the appraiser goes back to make sure that they're done, and then we can close.
Gotcha.
So,
in my experience, the majority of the lender required repairs has been for a roof.
So that's because the useful life of the roof has to be 2 years from closing.
Okay.
So a lot of times, I think usually, what does the appraiser call for a roof inspection?
Well, the inspector within that option period goes up there, checks out the roof, looks at everything, says, hey, it either has, you know, it needs to be repaired or not. And sometimes sellers just want to patch it versus replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes sellers say, well, I'm just going to wait to see what the appraiser says. And then it's really late in the game because right. you're putting money in escrow in order to get those people in that house,
right?
Or else you're not closing until that roof is completely finished.
Right.
That's been traditionally.
Yeah. So once a roof repair comes into the transaction, whether from the appraisal or from an amendment,
mm-hmm.
right, then it has to be done before you can close.
Right. Right.
And that's not usually a quick.
That's not usually.
Yeah. That's a schedule in 3 to 4 days to get completed.
Okay. So we've got past that. Are we declared a close yet?
Oh my gosh!
Next
I think clear to close drives y'all crazy.
Absolutely insane.
I have nightmares about clear to close
because Ashley gets the phone calls from the agents. Are we clear to close? Are we clear to close? Because sometimes it's easier to get in touch with you than it is the lender.
Yeah.
And so we call you.
And I'm like, I don't know if we're clear to close. I never know if we're clear to close until the very last second.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Okay, let's do it.
All right,
clear to close is our favorite term.
Right? I agree. But just at least for legacy, this is our process. So you have conditions. You're waiting for the appraisal. All of that comes in, right? You resubmit to underwriting. They have 24 to 48 hours with those conditions. Usually we're getting stacked up to our closing date. Like we're all on edge.
Right.
We're all ready. So you get your final approval. That does not mean clear to close for us.
Right.
You still have to go through QC. So the verbal verification of employment.
Don't buy a car,
people.
Oh,
so this is what is clear to close, that part?
Uh-huh.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
It's always just been this big mythical CTC, three letters, clear to close, that I didn't really know what that meant.
No, it's the QC. So it's between final approval and QC doing their part. You know, that's also a time any new inquiries may have hit the credit report that we've got to go back to the borrower and go, hey, you checked with Best Buy. Did you buy anything? Is there a debt here? And if there's a debt, not always does it ruin the deal, but then we have to go back through underwriting.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
dang underwriting. Okay, so the final approval is after the underwriter has reviewed whatever those conditions are, whether that is lender required repairs, or it's why is this $8,000 from the hunting blind here, or whatever all those things are.
Another thing that can cause delays is we also have to have insurance by then as well.
Right. Okay.
For a final submission to underwriting because of the ratios. So,
and there have been earlier this year, there were some
the insurance process
was a long process. You almost had to start 20 days prior to closing just to get your stuff squared away.
Yeah. So, yeah, so final approval from underwriting. Then you go through QC. Once QC does their part, you get clear to close.
And then you have to wait 3 days?
No.
No,
then
this is good. When the documents are coming and I got the people in the closing room.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Usually from when we get CTC, docs are sent within about 4 hours.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
Gotcha.
But y'all are not the norm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I still think I drive y'all crazy because you're always like, when am I going to have this?
Yeah, I got them scheduled it too. It's 152.
So, for our listeners, so in the process, so if you're picking up what we're putting down, there is so much nervousness at the very end of a transaction because you actually have to schedule your closing so that you're on the schedule, and that clear to close can sometimes arrive the morning of or the night before.
This is where the whole duck thing comes
in. Yes,
100%. You know, Donna and I, we're texting. Is your stuff coming? Yeah, it's going to be there in a few minutes. And Ariel's calling me. But the customer is like having coffee and pie because they're supposed to be here in an hour. That's how it's supposed to be, right? We're supposed to be going crazy, getting it all ready so that it just magically happens for them. And it's a happy, exciting day.
Yeah.
You know?
They think that somehow our job is the easiest on the planet.
Right.
We're sipping champagne and bonbons every afternoon.
Yeah, doing our nails.
No. I know. Mm-hmm. Some days.
So one thing, Ashley, just for Title and us, like, until y'all have that balance CD, that's another thing that keeps us from dropping docs. Like, for Legacy, when our closer has a final CD,
a CD is a closing disclosure.
Mm-hmm. When we have it balanced with Title, that's when she finally shoots the order to the attorneys. And that starts the 4-hour period, too.
I feel like we do a good job on that.
Y'all do.
You know, like, but no, you and I, when we're working together, I feel like, you know, we get those balanced CDs and we're like, okay, we're balanced. And then everybody's like, okay, give a deep breath. And then we start worrying about clear to close and all the next things that are coming.
Right.
So,
There's a lot of things that happen at the same time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
That have to line up. But it's at the end, I would say the last 3 days is on, it's a speed thing, right? Like this and this and this.
Right.
Agreed on that. And, I mean, what would we do with all the excitement that we have every day about?
Life would be very boring.
Life would be boring. That's
do
exactly
you,
right.
as a title company, prefer a wire or cashier's check, or does it not matter?
I don't care. You know, I think it's funny because for the longest time, all the title companies were like, we won't take a cashier's check. We only want wires. And then they started forging cashier's checks. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, okay, we're not going to take a cashier's check. Then the wire fraud. Now we don't want to. We have all along, Texas Department of Insurance regulates this. We as a title company can take cashier's checks and we can take wires. So we have never tried to sway either way. We don't care.
Okay.
And we fund same day on cashier's checks because that's what Texas Department of Insurance says we're supposed to do.
Okay. So there's no hold.
No. But I do know that there were title companies that were holding and saying that they wouldn't close off and that kind of thing. But really and truly, again, Texas Department of Insurance regulates that.
Okay. Gotcha.
So. Okay. Well, I think we need to start wrapping it up.
As fun as this has been. I know. You did a great job.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for having me.
just remember that you can reach us at the closing table on Facebook or at closingtable@gmail.com. I imagine that this would spur a bunch of questions, and we'd love to hear advice, feedback. And if you have questions, please let us know. We can put you in touch with Donna. She is local, very accessible. She's been able to help a very wide range of clients that I've had, from first-time home buyers to uber complex investors.
Yes, and we appreciate working with you. So thank you. Thank you for being our very first guest.
Yes, you have set the bar pretty high.
Yes, you have. We appreciate it.
Whoever comes next is going to be a little nervous, I think.
So true.
I know. We don't even have anybody lined up, so don't get too excited, people.
All right. Thank you guys for listening.
Bye.